The tide, it be a-turning. And it's the news, according to me. Yeah, well, there's some good news out there. You know, if you dig around long enough, you can find stuff. It's good news, I guess. I suppose. I reckon. I do a lot of reckon. About everything I get involved with is pretty much becomes a wreck. It's pretty much the story of my life. There's interesting stuff going on. You know, I've been trying to immerse myself in some alternative outlets like Gab and Rumble. And frankly, you know, all those hateful places to go, the hate speech, conspiracy theory bubbles. That's where I'm going. And it's actually giving me a lot of hope for what's going on. A lot of positive news happening. A lot of people are winning battles against this crazy thing. And that's been helpful. But what surprises me, the one thing that nobody seems to be talking about on any of those platforms, and I don't understand this. This is just confusing to me that it's so ignored, is what's in my cup. As you know, this morning it's hot chocolate. But don't worry. I have hot chocolate here. It's 9:29 and a half. Friday, October 15th, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're listening. I'm glad you're, I appreciate you liking and subscribing or sharing this with other people who might want to subscribe and have the information that I'm opining about, giving you my opinion on. That's all this is. It's an opinion show. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not even really a professional anything. I just show up. Got a microphone here. I just record, and then you listen, and that's how it works. And you sit there, and maybe you yell at the radio, or the record player, or the cassette player, whatever it is that Joe Biden has today. I'm pretty sure he listens to this show, because he doesn't know what he's listening to. He probably thinks this is all about him, or maybe he thinks it's about Brandon. Not sure. So that's what's in my cup, and nobody's talking about it. So I was kind of concerned about that. So I started to sound like Joe. But at least I'm not trying to run the country. I've been listening to this better stuff. It's been interesting, kind of listening to some of the battles that are being won in this whole fight against the mandate stuff. And it's been good. There's actually some promising, uplifting stuff going on. And that's good. That's all well and good. But that's not what this show is about. This show is about doom and gloom. So that's what we're going to get into here. A couple things. One, you know, I've talked about, if you go back and listen to some of the shows I've had about some of the people that are involved in this particular administration, the people that they're choosing for this administration. Merrick Garland is one of those, and Janet Yellen is another one. And this administration now has decided that they're going to go after the rich, make sure they're paying their fair share. And in order to do that, if you have more than $600 in your bank account, we need to have access to that. That's pretty much every single American on the face of the planet. They really do see the brass ring this time. And if you understand what I mean by that, every time the merry-go-round goes round, there's a brass ring. You try to reach for it and try to get it. And this time they really are going all out to get that brass ring. It's usually just outside your reach. And you only have this opportunity that goes around and around. If you look at Hebrew Hebrew thought is that history repeats itself. There's a there's all kinds of types and shadows of different individuals in Scripture throughout the history of Israel and the history of mankind, really. And the one thing you need to realize, and this is what one of the things that concerns me a lot about this vaccine thing. Guess what country has the highest vaccination rate? Israel. That bothers me. The enemy, the enemy of our soul, has also been the enemy of the Jews. Now you can, I don't know, you know, there are as many different denominations and sects within the Jewish community as there are in the, well, I don't know, maybe there's not as many as there are in the Christian community. I don't know. Everybody's a rebel. Everybody's got their own, you know, ideas of what's right and what's wrong. And everybody thinks that they go to the right church until they've been there for a couple of years and they realize that it's the church that's the church is all wrong and they're the only ones that are right. And they move on to the next church that they find that's, oh, this is the right church. And then they, you know, realize later it's not. Because they showed up. Now it's all of a sudden it's not perfect. It was great until they got there. The I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. But so I'm not really kidding. So am I kidding or not? I don't know. You tell me. So I have this and the enemy is after the Jews. That's the point I'm trying to make before I get off on a really huge tangent there. That would be huge. I have I'm almost out of hot chocolate here. That's the real crisis is right here in my cup. It's almost empty again. I need to fix my hot chocolate a little bit later, right before the show, rather than fixing it I'm drinking it as I'm preparing for the show, which is about 5 minutes. I spend a whole four, sometimes five, occasionally 7 or 8 minutes, actually. On a good day, I'll spend almost 10 minutes preparing for this show. And that'll get onto a topic I'll get off on that tangent later on in the show, because I'm sure that's something I need to do. So the thing that gets me is this whole thing about Israel is it's concerning to me. The enemy tried to kill off Israel back in the late 30s or early 40s. And if you think that that spirit has gone away, you are sadly mistaken. That spirit has been here since Israel left Egypt. In fact, the Pharaoh's armies took off after him when they realized, oh my, we shouldn't have done that. Let's go back after these people. What were we thinking? All we had was a few plagues, lost a few firstborn. Let's go after them and kill them, bring them back. And didn't end well for those who didn't bring their flippers. That same spirit has been in the earth since the inception of man. Anyone who is considered a child of God, a believer, a follower, a disciple, is not welcome in the realm of the rulers that be, the principalities and powers that tend to dominate this earth with their philosophies and stuff. I'm not saying that God's not in control. I'm not saying he's Lord of all. But folks, we're in a battle right here on the earth. We can walk in the victory that has gone before us, or we can succumb to it and be a part of the problem. We have this issue of, you know, what's going to happen with Israel? Now, there are some people out there who say that this vaccine is poison and it's going to kill everybody. I'm not convinced of that yet. I am convinced that there's going to be a certain number of people who probably will have long-term complications or possibly worse over the next couple of years, possibly less than that. I think the long-term effects of this are still outstanding and unknown. And the continued push for the vaccines, if they're relating this is what gets me, is they're trying to push this thing out there as if it's, I think there's an act of 1905 or whatever it was, that was the polio, was it the polio or the, or something else, I think it was the whatever vaccine, but chickenpox maybe it was. Was it chickenpox? Smallpox. One of the pox. But this vaccine came out and it was made mandatory, and they're using that ruling as the precedent for submitting to vaccine mandates. The problem with this is that was a vaccine that actually worked. The problem we have with this vaccine is it's not a vaccine in the true sense. They had to change the definition of, you realize the CDC changed their definition of what a vaccine is. That most people don't realize this. Just recently, this year, the CDC changed their definition of what a vaccine is so that they can continue to call this a vaccine, because it's not a vaccine in the traditional sense. It does not immunize you. When they started realizing that, they were like, well, okay, this isn't really falling under the definition of a vaccine, so we can't really call it that, so we have to call it a vaccine so that we can make it mandatory and use that 1905 act for smallpox or chickenpox or whatever it was to be the the precedent that we use to mandate this. I apologize for my throat being kind of, it's probably because I'm drinking hot chocolate. It has a tendency to gum up the works in the pipes there. But I'm almost done with it, so I will soon be using my backup cup of iced tea. And I know that's what you guys are all really concerned about. I just want to say I really appreciate all of you and your concern for what's in my cup. It's overwhelming. It's very touching. You know, the actors involved in what's going on. So I'm concerned about this whole thing with Israel. And, you know, what is going to happen there? Is this going to be another attempt at mass genocide? We have already gotten to the point, less than a year into this. Now, keep in mind, this is less than a year into this administration. I'm not sure why people have a tendency to think that everybody's just supposed to live forever. And when somebody dies, it's just such a tragedy, and they're so surprised, and, oh, that person, oh, they died, oh, that's terrible. That should never have happened. Well, no, it shouldn't have happened. But it does happen because of what happened, you know, thousands of years ago when a particular individual decided to eat from a certain tree. It's been the reality of every human being on the face of the planet, except for one. I mean, he had to die, but he, you know, overcame that. And we shall follow in his footsteps. The concern here is that people the saying is that those who choose to ignore history are doomed to repeat it. Well, I have to tell you, that's pretty much sums up the entire bane of the human existence. We have a tendency to, even the history in our own life, we'll make the same mistake twice. About 1,000 times we'll make the same mistake twice. And wonder why we're not getting any results. Gee, I keep banging my head into this wall. And every time it hurts. I would think that one of these times I would just be able to walk through the wall. And it wouldn't hurt. That's not the way life works. That's not the way it works, folks. There needs to be a change. And that's why, you know, we get this whole thing of, well, God made me this way. I hear this from a certain sector of our population, of our society. They like to say that, well, God made me this way. Well, no, he didn't make you that way. You might have been born that way, maybe. Okay, let's say if you were born that way, that doesn't make that way right. A pedophile can say they were born, and this is their argument, they were born that way. That's the way they were born. They were just born that way. God made them that way. That's what they want to say. God made me this way. So you have to accept it. It must be okay because God did it. No, God wants to redeem you from that. He made you. He didn't make those flaws. Those flaws came about through human, basically selfishness. And now you want to say that's the way God made you, so you need to accept it and just live that way. You see, that goes totally against everything that the whole reason that he died on the cross. I mean, anybody who commits crime or who has social, sociopathic, psychotic issues could say God made him that way. Serial killers. Oh, God made me that way. Oh, well then, okay, I'm sorry. Go right ahead and do what you're doing then. I'm sorry. Obviously, God made you that way, so that's okay. Pedophiles. And other things. But that's not really what this show is about today. That's not the subject of this show. Somehow I just got down on that tangent. So the IRS now has decided to go after every single human being in the country if that has a bank account, basically. If you get a debit card, if you get a, what do they call it, the little monthly, if you're living on welfare, you're going to have more than $600 in your account. At some point, if you're on Social Security, you're probably going to have more than $600 in your account. You see, the banking industry is closing in. The banking industry, the IRS, all these things are kind of closing in. The money system, they have to crash the dollar. I don't know if you understand. All this printing of money, trillions and trillions of dollars, will crash the dollar. And they have to devalue the dollar so that we are more See, here's the thing. This is what drives them batty. I'm not even sure they understand economics well enough to know what they're even doing. I think they are possessed, in my opinion. People like Bernie Sanders are possessed with this idea that they are the saviors of the world and they're going to create equality and justice for all. Equity and equality. When you hear the term equity, that means outcome. When you hear equality, that means equal opportunity. When you hear the word equity, that means equal outcome. They're two very different things. And they want to try to make it sound like it's, they want to make this real easy switch from equality to equity. Because it sounds really close, doesn't it? Well, we believe in equity for all. I believe in equality for all with regard to opportunity. I don't think anyone should be discriminated against, whether they're white or black, dark-skinned, light-skinned, whatever their skin color is, whatever their historical background is, whatever their religion is. They should have the same opportunity. But if one works harder than the other, if one has a particular aptitude, a gifting, you might say, for a particular type of career or learning ability, whatever that ability is, whether it's academic or physical ability, they should be allowed to excel in that area that they discovered that they can do. If a football team is playing another football team and that one team scores a goal, they shouldn't split the team score with the other team. And that's what they're asking us to do. Well, no matter how hard you work and how little the other person works, you should both have the same outcome. That's just ludicrous and stupid, and it's asinine and insane. And yet that is the woke culture that we face today. There was recently a student campus, right-wing, I don't know what it was. It was can't remember the name of the thing. They had this interview where they were interviewing kids on a campus, on a college campus. And they were talking about admissions and how, you know, if the population of the town, if it's a community college and the population of the town is, say, 50% white and another 20% black and another 10% Latino and whatever Asian, and it's just, and then, you know, undecided. Undecided, I guess. That's a race. Should the campus look the same? Should they only allow students with that same demographic? Oh, yes, I think so. All of them stood up for that idea. They were every single one of them was on board with that. One of them was a Latin student, and he said, "Oh, that's how I got in. Otherwise we can't. You know, I'm Latin and Latino, whatever." Or as they're saying now, Latinx or Latinx. I don't know that I've heard that the Latino community isn't even that the yes whatever they're supposed to be called now. I don't know. I have no idea. It changes every week. Are they Mexican? Are they Southern South American? Are they what are we? Indigenous? I don't know. Okay, nobody's indigenous. Adam and Eve were the only indigenous people that ever lived. Everybody else migrated. I'm joking, sort of. Or am I? The squeaky chair I have in here today, I don't understand why this chair has become so squeaky. I think I need to put some grease on this thing. That's just a little side note for those of you who need to know. We have this interesting issue now where we have these people who are saying that, you know, there needs to be equity on the college campuses. Well, they went through and asked them all these questions about admissions and all this stuff, and they were all, you know, it's going right, just played into all the talking points, got them all to admit to the talking points that you would expect them to say. And sure enough, they all said it. They were all on board with that. So they got it all done, got it all said, and then they brought up the football team. Well, do you think that should apply to sports? Do you think that we should have 50% of the team should be white, 20% black, and 10% Latino, 5% Asian, whatever's left, undecided? Oh, of course not. They didn't like that at all. Because that's based on, you know, how well you can play. We want to have a winning team, some of them said. It has to be based on, you know, who plays the best. A couple of them, one of them in particular, realized as soon as the question was asked that their original thoughts about equity needed to be rethought. And some of them, by the end, caught on to this issue that maybe it needs to be based on a merit. Meritocracy, a merit-based system where someone tries hard and achieves. And maybe one person tries hard. It's not about how hard you try. It's about what you can achieve and how you can overcome your own weaknesses. Maybe math comes easy to you. Maybe it doesn't. And just because you tried harder to do math than someone else who had found it easy doesn't mean that they should be punished for that. And it doesn't mean that you should have their reward. Now, if we're basing something on effort, if you're getting an overall achievement or overall improvement award, that's one thing. But the top honor goes to those who can do the math the best. When a company is hiring someone who they need a mathematician to work for them, they don't want someone who tries hard. They want someone who can do it because they want a team that wins. At the end of the day, you want someone who can do an actuary table that knows what they're doing because lives depend on it. Their business bottom line depends on it. The service that they provide, people depend on, and they depend on people doing accurate work. Well, they really tried hard, but sorry we screwed up your insurance account. And well, it's because somebody really was, they were really trying really hard. They tried harder than anybody else we've ever seen before. But they don't know what 2 + 2 is. Or do you want somebody who it just comes easy for them and they can just figure it in their head? Like Rain Man. 137 toothpicks. Yeah, definitely 137 toothpicks. I'd rather have him do my actuary tables than someone who comes out on late night talk show and can tell me all about the problems of the world. So, I digress. It's this crazy thing that's happening in society today that's the wokeism. Now, and I bring this up because I want to talk about Joe Rogan a little bit. I really hadn't planned on this today, but I'm going to talk about Joe. Mr. Rogan. I like to call him Joe. We're good buddies. We're on a first name basis. Joe Rogan, I don't think I played this yesterday. I can't remember. It seems like I think I played all this stuff about Biden saying that the vaccines are going to protect you from COVID. And then I also played quotes from Fauci, Mr. Fauci. That guy. The guy who justifiably lies to everyone just because he's trying to protect us. So the question is, when is he not lying? He might say, well, I was lying because I only told that because I want to make sure that the frontline workers got masks. Okay, well, how do I know you're not lying now? The next time you come out and make a statement, how do we know whether or not that's true or not? Or are you just telling us something for our own good? It's called situational ethics, and it seems to be you can justify. He will not admit that he's lied. He will not say, I lied, I'm a liar. He will not say that. If you lie, that makes you a liar. I don't know if you understand that or not. Maybe that's a concept that's lost on you. I don't know. But that's how that works. While you're lying, you are a liar. So I just wanted to say that. This is an interview that I hope, I think I have gotten all the bad language out of this. He does say some cuss words in this interview. He's interviewing Dr. Gupta, Goopy Gupta, Sanjay Gupta, who is, I think he's on CNN. He's their doctor guy, specialist. And he tries to weasel out of this. And I'm pretty sure while he's in the middle of this conversation with Joe Rogan, he's probably thinking, I probably shouldn't be here. And CNN is probably thinking, why did you go on that show? Because he really lays it on. I mean, and I hope that Joe is starting to wake up to the fact that there are some evil people on this planet. And they have an agenda. And maybe he can come out, because he's got a huge popular podcast, and he can come out and defend himself. It's all the little people out there who aren't Dave Chappelle, who aren't Joe Rogan, who aren't Tucker Carlson. The little people who are silenced before they even have a chance to say anything, before they have a chance to get a platform. And that's what's happening. It happened to me. I had a show that by any right on YouTube with the team we had, I should have had at least 10,000 subscribers, at least. Probably would have had 1 million. But was never able to break through that barrier when I started to catch on, started to get all kinds of listeners. We went down to 45 subscribers, and then there was 10, and then there was 5. And then no views. I could post, I was doing live broadcasts that were increasing exponentially. And then all at once, no views. None. Zero. Ten shows, no views. Just unbelievable. I mean, even just random accidental clicks. Nothing. Nothing at all. I would post it on my Facebook page, and I would get all kinds of hits on Facebook. I would post the link to YouTube on Facebook, still getting hits on Facebook until that started to drop off. But my YouTube hits were still zero. How does that work? I don't understand. I'm not saying I would be a Joe Rogan. I'm just saying I'm a little guy. I'm a little guy here just trying to have a little show and have, you know, maybe a couple hundred subscribers and just be able to, you know, I was just trying to, you know, pretend like I was, you know, worth listening to. But that was quelched. I should have snuck in like some of these other guys do. They just kind of make sure they are careful with their, how they label their videos and what they say. And they build up an audience and they're powerful enough they can kind of say some things. But I digress. This is Joe Rogan. I know it's already been in the news. This is probably old news now, actually, by this point. I should have probably talked about this yesterday. Joe Rogan talking to Sanjay Gupta. Let's see what he has
to say. Thing is, we're like going so fast. Like, I feel like I'm missing.
Do you think that's...
First of all, let me just say this. This gets back to what I was saying the other day about stammering. People stammering in their voices. And when I play the... When I get some of these clips from Merrick Garland when he was being questioned by Congress, it becomes very obvious that these people are making stuff up on the fly. If they don't have a teleprompter in front of them, they are really scared. They are trying to be creative in their head as they're speaking. And the problem with that is they start to stammer, start to stutter, start to they don't know what they're going to say next. So it just becomes very obvious. And you can hear this in Sanjay's voice now. There was more of this prior to when this clip I edited out. I think I had edited out some vulgarities from Joe. I hope I got them all out. I may have missed one. I hope I didn't. But If I did, I apologize because I play this stuff live. This might be one of my exceptions where I go back and actually edit out the word. If I didn't get it edited out, I might go back and edit it out. But I think I did. But we'll give this a try. See what happens. Here he is talking. You'll hear him stammering here. He was stammering more before this, and he's trying to control the conversation. He's trying to get the conversation back, and Joe's trying to press him on one particular question. Why did they lie? And here it is.
Dude, the thing is, we're like going so fast. Like, I feel like I'm missing.
Do you think that's a problem, that your news network lies? Not,
well, I don't.
Dude.
What did they say?
They lied and said I was taking horse dewormer. First of all, it was prescribed to me by a doctor.
Yeah.
Along with a bunch of other medications.
If you got a human pill, because there were people that were taking it, the veterinary medication, and you're not, obviously. You got it from a doctor, so that it shouldn't be called that. Ivermectin can be a very effective medication for parasitic disease, and as you say, it's probably, you know, I think, what, a quarter billion people have taken it around the world?
More.
I get that.
Way more.
So,
way more. Billions of people have taken it.
Can I just come back to the one I want to talk about? Two things on the ledger.
Before we get to that, does it bother you that the news network you work for out and out lied?
Well,
just outright lied about me taking horse dewormer?
They shouldn't have said that.
Why did they do that?
I don't know.
You didn't ask? You're the medical guy over there.
I didn't ask. I should have asked before coming on the podcast.
But they did it with such glee.
No,
yes,
Joe.
They did. I watched.
What is amazing to me about this is that Sanjay Gupta was on the panel of one of the shows when they were talking about Joe Rogan. Do you hear what I'm saying? Joe was there. Sanjay was there when they were talking about Joe. And he said nothing. And then he acts like, oh, well, what did they really say? Oh, come on, Joe. Now, what did they really say? He didn't want to come out and admit that they lied. And he never did. He never did admit that. And Joe presses him on this issue. And rightfully so. I'm shocked and amazed that Sanjay even went on that show. I really am, knowing what could end up happening to you there. Because Joe is a master at being able to keep it real and not hold back. He's not an unintelligent individual, obviously. Very strongly opinionated and wants to get to the bottom of things. He's not always right in his conclusions. But you know what? He knows he's not always right. I think that's what's refreshing about Joe Rogan is he's willing to be very forthright with what he knows to be to what he thinks is the truth. At the same time, he knows himself well enough to know that he could be wrong, and he's not afraid to admit when he's wrong. But he wants to know what's right. And he's unashamedly, unabashedly, goes after that. And I think that's very American, first of all. It's a very traditional thought in our society. However, that particular way of thinking is becoming very frowned upon. You must comply. I wish I could find, and I think I can probably find this if it hasn't been scrubbed from the internet. There's something that, I believe it was Merritt Garland. I'm pretty sure it was him. It was someone in this administration, I know that, who came out and said, the most dangerous people in the country right now are people who are choosing to do their own research. Think about that for a second. you shouldn't do your own research. You should just sit back and listen to what we tell you to think. We'll tell you what to think. Not how to think. What to think. They are absolutely terrified of this idea of people going out and doing their own research. Only because there's so much misinformation out there. Oh yeah, so we're supposed to trust you.
No, you shouldn't wear a mask. Oh, well, maybe you should wear a mask. Maybe you should wear two.
Yeah, that's why we don't trust you. Because you lie to us one day
for our own good. For the good of society. You're a part of a society now, and you need to take this vaccine because you're a part of society. You have a civil duty to take this vaccine.
That is not a vaccine. That does not keep you from getting COVID, nor does it keep you from spreading COVID. And yet it is mandatory that you take it. You must comply, or you will lose your job, or you will not be able to do business with the federal government. Or you will not be able to do business with anybody who does do business with the federal government, because now you're a subcontractor. I have to tell you, the federal government doesn't build anything. They have contractors do all that stuff. And you have people working for people who do business with the federal government. There's very few people who are exempt from any connection to the federal government, whether it be contractor or subcontractor. For instance, here's a good example. United Airlines. They are a contractor to the federal government. They fly military. They have contracts to fly cargo and Army personnel. There are regional airlines such as Envoy, Republic. Now, some of these have gone out of business, so I'm just saying what they are. The PSA, Air Wisconsin, SkyWest. You ever heard of any of those airlines? Probably not. Chances are you probably haven't heard of them. Some people have. They are subcontractors. They fly under the color of a major airline, whether it be American or United or Delta. It'll be American Express or American Eagle. United Express. Delta Express, I think it is. I don't know. Whatever it is. And they fly for those companies. Well, guess what? They're subcontractors. They don't directly have a contract with the federal government. They have a contract with someone who does. Now, all of a sudden, let's say someone works for or has a contract with or does business with Air Wisconsin or SkyWest or Envoy. And all of a sudden, they realize that they're a subcontractor. They have to. Well, now, does that person who makes sandwiches for the catering service, who serves United, are they going to be able to continue to do that without vaccine, even though there's only 20 people working in their company? You see, this mandate of anybody who has a business larger than 100 people, it trickles down into just about everybody. It really does. And there are a lot of left-wing lunatics out there who are so adamant about this vaccine thing that they may just choose to not do business with you because you haven't had the vaccine, regardless of whether you ever talk to them or see them. Online businesses. One of my, and I see this coming. I see it coming. It could very easily happen. There's a particular service that I use when I'm doing my voiceover work that I happen to know. It's a subscription service. I pay a lot of money to use it to get voiceover jobs. I happen to know that they are a very left-leaning company. very left-leaning company. It doesn't bother me. I do business with them. They provide a service. They don't require me to believe what they believe. They can believe whatever they want to believe. They can represent whatever they want to represent. However, the fascist mentality of the left right now is that you comply or you will not be a part of our society. We will banish you from this society. If you don't agree with us, you're a threat to our society. That's fascism, folks. The very people who say they're against fascism and they're against hate are the very ones who hate you and foster this fascism that we're talking about. Enough about that. I want to move on to another subject that's it's really, I think it's worth talking about at this point. We are witnessing an administration, and I've noticed this when I see, I just saw Carmella do another speech. She did a speech in front of people about something. I can't remember what it was. I can't stand to listen to her. She sits there and she nods her head when she's telling people. She bounces her head and her elbows go out. She looks like a chicken when she's talking. The way, and here's what's really, really annoying to me. I know that most politicians read from a teleprompter, and most of them read, except for people like DeSantis. I think he just gets up there and talks. He is quick on his toes, and he can speak. He's because he's true to himself. Now, there are some people on the left who can do that. They can just get up there and speak and speak. Now, Nancy Pelosi is polished enough. She can get up there and speak, but she stays on the talking points. She knows that if she keeps repeating the word Constitution, Constitution, it's for the children. It's for the children of the Constitution. We have Constitution. It's a Constitution. If she just says the talking point, the word that she knows people like, and she gets away with that. But she can't, she doesn't do well when she gets off teleprompter either, for that matter, but she can. She doesn't say anything. She just is able to do it and make it sound like she's telling her opinion, but she's not actually saying anything. So the thing that, and here's the thing, that the administration, the current administration we have right now, they cannot even read a speech and make it sound like it is coming from anything else than someone who's poorly reading a very poorly written script. In fact, when I was watching Carmella read this particular speech, she's standing up there, elbows flapping, head nodding, and they do that because it's this believe me thing. You have to go, if you nod your head when you're talking to somebody, you get them to nod their head and they're going to start to agree and we're all on the same page and we all agree. I don't fall for that. Somebody starts nodding as they're talking to me, I become very much aware of that. Especially when they're reading something and poorly reading it, as if they're reading it for the first time. This is what gets me about this. That's why Joe focuses in on that. His eyes kind of, he's not looking at the camera. He's kind of looking off to the side because he's reading that teleprompter and his eyes are really focused in. And he kind of makes some gestures once in a while. He uses his hands, makes it sound like, we really need this. This is working because we're doing, and they'll say about three or four words at a time in the speech. And sometimes they land, it's called a landing word. When you're in the middle of a sentence, sometimes you can land on a word and continue the sentence without any punctuation. See what I'm doing here? Because it's called a landing word. It makes sense to land there and pause. When they're speaking, their landing words are random. And once in a while, Joe especially, he'll screw up as he's reading something. Let me see if I can find something as an example. I doubt if I'll be able to very quickly here, but I'll read this. Yeah, I think I can do this. This is just something that I think was written. Transcribed from somewhere else as part of an article. Yeah. This was transcribed from someone who was being interviewed, so I'll try to go through this. So this has basically come to be the place we are either preaching to the choir or yelling across the street at the opposition. I do not intend to yell at anyone here, but there is a good chance I will be preaching to the choir. But you just feel like you want your voice to be heard. The riot is the voice of the people unheard. So, okay, that's all I'm going to do that. You could kind of see what I'm doing there. It's obviously being read. And I call it staccato. It's very staccato. Each word is kind of punched out. And they're in little groups of phrases. So that there's not, how should I put it? So that there's not this, it's not a fluid way of speaking. It sounds unnatural. And that the words that they're landing on sometimes don't even make sense. And that was actually, I do this all the time. So I'm always reading. And that's some of the people who read speeches who do this all the time. They know where to land on the words. These people do not know how to land on words. They're just reading things, randomly reading and making it very staccato, nodding their heads, wagging their bodies, trying to get you to agree with what they're saying as they're saying it. It's just creepy. And no one in this administration that I've seen so far, Merrick Garland, Janet Yellen, Joe Biden, Carmella, none of them seem to have the ability to just stand before a crowd of people and do any kind of expository. The other thing about all of this is how the media just goes along with it. Media is the same people who write the scripts for the commentators in the media are probably the same people writing the scripts, writing the speeches for these people. And let's talk about that for a second. Everybody talks about this being Obama's third presidency, third term. Let's be very clear about something. Obama is a puppet. The person pulling the strings behind Obama, and I'm not even sure that she is fully pulling the strings, but she's definitely the puppet master. She may not be the one writing all the scripts for the puppet show. Valerie Jarrett runs Obama. And I still, to this day, as far as I know, as far as history has enlightened itself to me anyway, is Valerie Jarrett was the first chief of staff for any president to ever last two terms completely. And then, here's another creepy fact. After he moved out of the White House and into the house down the street, Valerie Jarrett and her, quote, husband, moved in with Barack and Michelle. Isn't that a little bit weird? I don't know that any other president in history has had their chief of staff move in with them after they left the White House. Now, I know that it's not the same. Like, it's not like they're getting up and sharing the kitchen. I don't think that's happening. I think it's a building that kind of has probably some divided space. I'm sure everybody has their own living area. But they're right there. And there are common, there is common property within the house. I'm sure that's probably more like work office type thing. But the guy cannot function without her being there. And she's really running the show. And by the way, she's from Iran. And no, she's not a Christian. And no, I don't think Barack is either. Until I hear Barack Obama come out and testify, you know, he was raised as a Muslim. You realize that. He went to Muslim school. Still talks about it being a beautiful thing to hear the cry of the whatever in the morning prayers. I have never once heard him come out and testify why he accepted Christ. People who are raised Muslim and become Christian have a testimony. He has never, ever shared it in any of his writings, any of his speeches, anything he's ever said. Don't tell me that that man is a Christian, because there's not enough evidence to convict him of it. He went to a church in Chicago. Reverend Wright. That has members that are, that they fully understand and accept the fact that they're Muslim. They're Hindu, whatever they are. You can become a member of that church and not have any kind of confession of faith. So don't tell me he's a Christian. He's not. I don't know what he is. He's an opportunist. I'm not sure he's even a Muslim. I don't know. Christian, he is not. Not yet. Maybe he will become one. I'm hopeful, and I'm praying for his soul. Nothing would give me greater joy than if that man became a Christian. I'm not going to put him in a box and say he's not and he never will be. But everything I've seen in his public life and everything I've heard, I am not going to believe he's a Christian until I hear his testimony. And I have yet to hear that. It's not in his biography. It's in none of his speeches. So I'll just leave it right there. Anybody I've ever known who's a Christian, especially who's someone who's come from another religion, has usually had a very powerful testimony. Very compelling, actually. He never shared that. Now, to be fair, I've never heard Donald Trump's testimony. I really don't. I've never heard it. I don't know that he is. However, I have heard a lot of backstories since he's left the White House. Apparently, there have been some changes in Donald Trump's heart. Some very powerful and profound changes. These are from some insiders who actually have had some conversations with him, and I have a tendency to believe these people. I think we will see a different Trump if he decides to run again. I think things are going to be different. I think he understands the political game going on. It's going to be an uphill battle because the media already has all this momentum. They think that they defeated him at least once. They're going to defeat him again. But I think the American people now have had it. They may have showed up to vote. I don't believe that 81 million people voted for Joe Biden. You're not going to convince me of that. When more people showed up to vote for Donald Trump than any as have ever voted for any Republican ever for president. And yet the left was able to bring out even more to vote for Joe Biden. Where are they now? All I hear is chants for let's go Biden or let's go Brandon. That and that particular little chant is spreading not just across the country, but across the world. There are other places where they're making protests, this vaccine stuff. And they are chanting, let's go, Brandon. And it has become the creativity of people just never ceases to amaze me. So, that being said, that's all I'm going to say. My dogs are barking, and the music is playing. So that means the show must be coming to an end, because the dogs know. I still have plenty of tea in my cup. I'll finish the day drinking the rest of that. In the meantime, I hope that all of you have a wonderful, glorious day, knowing that this battle will be won. Unfortunately, it may be a very tough, grueling, uphill battle. But we're going to win it. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for taking the time to subscribe and thank and share this podcast with others. Hopefully you've been entertained, at least for the last hour. God bless everybody. Have a great day.